everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I know that basketball is technically back, but I was watching a Facebook video about a guy wrestling kind of with a bear that really trusted him and stuff. And it got me thinking, we haven't done one of these stupid hypothetical questions in a long time. What is the most dangerous animal that you could see yourself, like you would willingly put yourself in a room with?
A person. Let's talk basketball.
Oh, man. All right. So the Lakers wrapped up their scrimmages. And yeah. They did so against, you know, a team that maybe probably shouldn't be there at this point. But they did so. I still think, however, there was a lot that we can kind of walk away from these scrimmages with. You know, first and foremost, how happy we are to have basketball, and we've been over that pretty extensively. But I, even though it's only three games, and there are very obvious caveats to keep in mind whenever we talk about what we learned from such a small sample size, I do think there we learned some stuff, I think, about this Lakers team. And so for the entirety of the show, we're going to discuss the things that we felt were most notable. So, Pete, I'll let you start. What's the first takeaway from these three games that you're walking away with?
So I wouldn't quite put it as something I learned, but I think we got little clues, right? The most important thing, aside from health, is who is Kyle Kuzma? Is he the guy from the first game, or is he the guy from the second game, or somewhere in between? And some nights he's going to be one. Well, he didn't play in the third game.
I know.
There you go. Yeah. Sorry. A little slow on that. Kuz, although I liked Kuz defensively in the first game, I thought he made some nice passes. Like, he didn't irritate me as much as everyone else, but I also think a little more of him than I think the average Laker fan thinks of him. He's really a guy who's grown this year in the aspects of helping you win games. And that second game, though, man, and it plays into Waiters and J.R. Smith. Like, we've got way more guys who can have a random 20-point game on the roster now than we ever did before. And that's the real takeaway. Because really, I added it up the other day, and LeBron and AD were like a plus 17 in 21 minutes together or something, right? Yeah. Like, they were dominant when they played together. But most of this was, hey, let's get a look at the bench. Let's get a look at some of the new guys and see what they can do. And the returns were great there. But I think the most important aspect, although you can make a good argument for Waiters as a Rondo replacement, is the most important, I think is going to be Kuz, and just that ability to have some pop offensively on and with some wing defense capability, or at least size on the wing.
Yeah, I mean, if Kuz plays up, I'm not going to say the expectation, because some of the expectations out there with Kuzma heading into this year were pretty astronomical. But if Kuz plays up to, you know, relative talent level, then the Lakers become a legitimately different team. Like, having another person at his size that you could throw out there and have hit three pointers on when necessary, and also be big enough to bother the occasional wing, like that's the most important role player in the sport right now. And if Kuz is that guy, the Lakers become a lot more dangerous to every team that they might be able to see.
Yeah, it becomes a real issue, especially with his jump shooting, right? Like, that's the key for him, is if he's hitting his jumper in the mid-30s area, and he was really struggling in the last couple months from behind the arc, if he can get that up to the mid-30s, he said he made some tweaks to his shot. You noticed a wider base. My attention has been focused elsewhere, so I haven't had time to, like, really sit down with his jumper, because a lot of that's, like, close-up, side-by-side. Oh, this is different, that's different. I do think your point about a wider base, it looked like more of a one-motion shot, but I need to dive into the tape on that. But if he's been able to tweak his shot to the point where he can be like, just make open shots, man, make your open threes when you spot up like 35% of the time, I think we're like you said, a different team. And the absence since if Rondo puts the ball in his hands a little bit more, and he's made comments about, and that makes sense, right? A lot of scorers need to feel the ball. They need to those touches. And he's, I mean, even whether you're high on Kuz, whether you're not, you got to agree he's a rhythm player, right? Like he's a guy that can get into a flow and put up a lot of points. And a lot of that goes with feeling good, feeling that rhythm. That said, the playoffs are about not feeling good, the defense not letting you get your rhythm and all of that. So, but I do think that touching the basketball more is helpful in that respect for him.
Yeah, I noticed the wider base on his shot. And to me, it's a very logical tweak that he could make. Given the type of shots that he seems to want to take, or that the Lakers kind of put him in a spot to take, it's like there are times where the ball just rotates over to him and he's stationary and he takes a shot, right? But I would say just as, if not more often, he has some kind of movement, you know, he's moving in some way, shape or form. And when you shoot with the narrow base and you're in motion, that makes it a lot easier to tip over, you know, to lean this way, lean that way, overcompensate a different way. And I like the idea of Kuzma focusing on having a wider base because that kind of quiets down that movement up top.
That's a really good point, right? Like it's a sturdier foundation so that any left-right movement is kind of accounted for. I'm gonna dive into that. You texted me that the other day, and I'll take a look at that this week.
Yeah, I mean the giveaway there is that, you know, you're not going to be able to elevate as high because, you know, and you might not be able to generate as, I mean, because the point of it is to limit your motion, right? So you might not be able to generate as much space with a wider base. And you might not be able to elevate as much because you're now jumping with your feet wider apart. So it uses some different muscles. But if the only focus here is to quiet everything down up top, I actually really like the idea. My big takeaway here, and we'll throw it a break after this. My big takeaway isn't necessarily basketball specific, but so every single team in the bubble is dealing with not having fans, right?
This is a great point. I should have talked about this first. Yeah.
Some not necessarily for the first time, right? Like the Clippers are probably like, this feels like home. But everybody is dealing with not having fans there and not, you know, generating energy from the crowd or you know, feeding off of the negative energy that some crowds give off, right? You are literally, not literally in a bubble because it is not a bubble, as we've talked about a lot. But the Lakers, I think, are really going to have a huge advantage because they themselves are a home court advantage. They are so loud. They are so energetic and they are so positive. And in this kind of situation where there aren't going to be other people there to generate that kind of energy or focus or whatever, having a group as close as the Lakers is going to be one of the few inherent home court advantages, or the closest thing to a home court advantage that any team is going to have there. And that to me is as big a development as anything that we saw from any individual player.
No, it's a great point. We talked a lot about the environment and how strange it was going to be, and we got our first look at it. We'll see how different it is in a regular season or seeding game, as they're calling it, versus a playoff game. But I would imagine that there would not be much in the way of additional elements that change kind of the vibe, right? Like there aren't going to be fans. There isn't going to be some external playoff intensity. Maybe it's, you know, the TNT crew is there and you've got all of the bigger names in terms of, you know, the networks and different NBA personalities who weren't necessarily covering scrimmages, but it's not going to be that different. And, you know, like you said, I think the Lakers pulling for each other the way that they do, the level of engagement that everybody seems to have, just all of that. We're seeing some of the on-court results of the togetherness that we've talked about a lot this season.
It's inherently an intangible thing, right? But it feels tangible, especially in the setting where the bench itself is literally bigger, right? It's rows deep. Mm-hmm. Everybody's kind of spread apart. And it's this big, like, kind of, like, I kind of likened it when I was watching. Did you ever watch the Harry Potter movies?
Mm-hmm.
The, in the fifth, Yeah, in the fifth movie, Harry Potter gets in trouble and they have like all of the rows of people judging him for like the rows that are these benches
like that. Looks
exactly like that. Like that. And when you see, you know, whether it was somebody like LeBron dunking on a fast break or somebody like Devontae Kaycock making his first like quote unquote NBA bucket or something like that.
Uh-huh.
No matter what it was, these guys were just exploding off of the bench, high fiving each other, you know, and they were all just so very much into the game. And like you've played in tournaments and I've played in tournaments where you go up against a team like that, or you have a, you play on a team like that. And it's a huge advantage in this kind of setting where it's basically AAU ball, you know, it's a huge advantage that they're going to have.
Well, hey, man, AAU ball can go a few different ways, right? Like, that's the best version, right? Where everybody's pulling for each other and cheering for each other. There are other versions that are not quite as fun. And I think other teams will be experiencing that too, right? So, hey, if we can be the AAU team that's screaming for each other and all into it and supporting each other, like, those are the best teams, man. And everybody wants to play on those types of teams, right? That's where the Lakers have a lot of guys that we can get into this later, but guys who, you know, maybe have reputations from their past, right? Well, a lot of those types of guys, just most people in life, are really influenced by their environment, right? Like in some situations, it's going to be a really bad idea. In other situations, like, you get a lot of what's great about them without nearly as much of the issues that there are with them. And that leads to J.R. Smith and
Deion Waiters. Let's talk about them here in a second. Man, look at us already in playoff segue mode. Look at that.
Man, that was pretty sweet, wasn't it? I was feeling good about myself. I don't normally do the segues here.
So
I've been ready, man. I'm feeling myself. Yeah.
I want to isolate just those three words.
I'm feeling myself.
Yeah, there you go. So today, we saw J.R. Smith go 6 of 7 from the floor. Yesterday, by the time you guys are listening to this, J.R. Smith goes 6 of 7 from the floor. Deion Waiters attacked a blitz and had roughly, you know, 13 dribbles to get to the basket and then threw up the layup. And one of my favorite moments was like him and Vogel, like kind of standing there on the sideline, and Vogel's like, did you throw your wrist like this? Or did you, you know, it was kind of cool to see that. And, you know, the big concern heading into this was, how are the Lakers going to do without Avery Bradley? How would the Lakers cope without a secondary ball handler like Rajon Rondo and what he provided? And, you know, again, and this is the case with all of, other than I think the last point that I made, I don't think like, we have enough sample size to know that these guys get along. So, like, other than that point, everything here comes with the caveat of, this is only 3 games. But from those 3 games, do you feel like you have some kind of idea of how this might play out?
I mean, I feel really good about this team. This is the best I've felt about this team all year.
Really? Even better than those wins against Clippers and
Milwaukee? Those were highs, right? Like, those were, that night felt great. And I do think that it was indicative of, you know, what we could do in the playoffs. But we've got more skill sets represented on the roster. Man, like, I don't think people realize getting a guy like Deion Waiters and a guy like J.R. Smith at that point for nothing, like, nothing else. Those guys can play, man. They're good basketball players. And they've, I mean, look, you can always argue against somebody, argue what they are not, right? What they're not capable of doing. But what do we need from Deion Waiters? We need somebody who can dribble the basketball and get his own shot, right? Deion Waiters can do that.
Yeah.
We need, you know, he can dish off to the big, who happens to be either JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis, right? All of these bigs that can finish above the hoop and all of that. Like, Deion Waiters would not be perfect for every team. And I'm not even saying he's perfect for us, but what we need, he can do. What J.R. Smith can do is something we need. These guys that can hit these just bullshit shots, man. Like, come on, man. Like, that has no business going in.
Right.
You know, and if it was Rondo, it was Bradley, and it's no disrespect to their games. They're different types of players. Mm-hmm. But if they've got that ball in their hands with 6 seconds left on the shot clock, and they're ISO'd up against a big or a forward somewhere on, or even a guard on a switch.
You start running back on defense.
Right. They're probably not going to create that shot out of isolation. It's just not the type of players that they are. And I've argued, and we'll see this in the playoffs, see if this plays out, but just that individual one-on-one type shot making becomes exponentially more important in a playoff situation. And it's going to be important in the non-LeBron minutes. That's really when it comes up. But I even think that, you know, there's going to be a shot where they share the floor, like Rondo and LeBron shared the floor, right? And not every series is going to be really geared to their talents, although they're them perhaps more than others, because you always need a bucket. Yeah. But not every game is certainly going to be their game. But that's okay. We have other guys we can turn to, maybe not for their particular skill set. But having two guys like that, too, that I think most games, either Dion or JR will have something going. Like, they're going to have, like, one of those guys is going to make shots. That's just the nature of their game. There will be some when neither of them do, but there will be others where both of them are on. And just, I feel better about this team than I have at any other point, because we added a skill set that I thought we really, really needed. And now we're this complete team, or closer to complete, and they get along and we're all healthy. So, I mean, health is always the big X factor, but I'm feeling really good about this team.
I was kind of thinking about Waiters specifically, and what intrigues me the most about Waiters. And now this is going to sound a lot more negative than I actually intended to be. But I actually think this is a huge, because I'm all about value, right? And to me, what I find interesting, or the thing I'm most excited about Waiters, is we know definitively that he is going to play a role commensurate with his talent level, right? Or you know, he's not going to, the role that he, or the expectations of Dion Waiters are not going to exceed what he can provide. You know, I look at him as a luxury. Basically, if he has it going one night, or all you really need from him on some nights is just to get the ball up the court a few times, get the offense going, and kind of go from there. And then if he gives you more than that on any given night, then awesome, right? But the guy that he replaced, I could basically have said definitively that his role, or the expectations of him, were going to exceed what he can bring to the table. And I think having somebody who more closely fits the role that he's going to play here, and allows other guys to play roles that they better fit into, like, I think that's a huge value there. And like, that's on top of all the stuff that you're talking about from a purely basketball standpoint. But I'm just talking in terms of allotting minutes in over the course of a basketball game. Like, I feel like Dion Waiters is never going to, or is almost, at the very least, very rarely going to be put in a situation that he cannot meet the expectations that come with that situation. And, and that, to me, you know, I don't mean it to say, like, you know, Waiters isn't the player that, you know, I don't mean it pejoratively. I just mean that he has been with a team for an amount of time that the book on him isn't written quite yet. Whereas, like, the book on Rondo was written. We knew what that was going to look like. Vogel had already spoken to how that was going to look. And I'm really looking forward to having a player in this specific spot playing that specific role, who I know that that's the role he's going to play that opens up the other roles for other players. That makes sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And I think that comes with, like, having guard skills as a scorer. I think that's the specific thing that does open up things for everyone. And he's going to miss passing reads. I didn't think he handled blitzes particularly well when Washington trapped him. He had that one at the end
where stumbling around drunkenly. That's the best play that he made.
Hey, it works for us, right?
yeah.
Now, yeah, he reminded me a little bit of Jordan Clarkson on those, right? Uh-huh. Where, you know, he missed the short roll guy or the skip pass. It was usually the skip pass that was open. And that's going to be how he gets defended in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. But having somebody worthy of being blitzed, even if he doesn't make the right read every time, like, you're not blitzing Rondo. Why are you making Rondo a passer? He's going to deliver the pass to you. So it's at least something where in that chess match of going up against a team, it's like, all right, how good are they on their blitzes? How good are they on their drops, on their switches, on their shocks, all these different coverages? And you identify, well, hey, maybe their blitzing isn't that good. This particular team that we play, they're really good on their drops, really good on their switches. But if they're really good on their switches, well, hey, guess what? Dion can get a bucket against this big that they switch on there. We've identified this guy that Dion's going to be able to be, hey, come set a screen, right? And now you've got that matchup against him. Oh, well, now we need to go to blitz coverages, right? And that's not something Dion's as good at doing, but maybe the defense isn't either. But if they are, if they're great at that, maybe that's not a series for Dion, right? So that's what's so interesting about this team, is that there's so many of these guys that have these are their clear strengths, but these are also their clear weaknesses. And depending on the other team, it's going to make sense to play one guy some nights and other guys on other nights, or at least more, right? Like, Vogel will have a rotation. But I do think that, like, different, and I think that's part of the value of this team. Like, we got a lot of good players, and I think different guys are going to step up as that third guy. I think it's more by committee than ever before, even with Kuz's talent.
Yeah, there's like nobody who, while they're on the court, I'm thinking to myself, God, we just got to make it through these minutes. Mm-hmm. There's nobody on the team like that anymore. All right, let's take a quick second here. And when we come back, we're going to finish up with our last couple notes that we might have learned from these last three scrimmages. We've spent quite a bit of time now, two full segments, on either role players or, you know, intangible aspects of the game. But at the end of the day, how far the Lakers go is going to have everything to do with their superstars, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be LeBron. It's going to be AD. It's going to be how those guys play together. And I'm interested. Did they meet your expectations? Did they exceed your expectations? Because I think there's a case to be made they exceeded expectations by how they played in the minutes that they played together.
Yeah, look, the superstars looked great. They didn't play a ton. They didn't play in this Wizard scrimmage. AD got hurt in that first quarter, got poked in the eye in the last one. So we didn't get a huge sample size on them. But, man, they were swarming on defense. This team has the ability to go on runs in multiple ways, right? You've got LeBron going nuts for a few minutes. You've got AD being completely unguardable and drawing 12 free throws in a quarter or a half, right? They can go and defensive runs where they're swarming on the perimeter and making great rotations. They can go on shot blocking runs. They blocked, 21 shots against Detroit earlier in the season, right? They can go on runs where, like, your role guys are, like, think of the lob threats, right? JaVale, Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis.
Dude, made J.R. Smith look good on a lob.
they've got the ability to, you know, athletically bully and all that. There's just so many different ways. And every once in a while they get hot from three, right? That's probably less of a, and that's going to be something that's very interesting. If we play Houston, that's going to be a series, man. I'm really interested to see in that series. But to get back to the point of the superstars, like, they looked great. They looked in shape. They looked ready to go. And they're so complimentary. That's the thing with LeBron and AD. We've been saying since the beginning of the season, they play off of each other so well. And then when you've got all of these other elements of the team, of which they drive the car, but they've got different guys that fit next to them, it's just really, really exciting, man, what the future holds. I'm just praying for health.
Yeah, it's really rare that two guys of LeBron and AD's stature actually make each other better, right? Mm-hmm. Like, pretty often it's like, all right, let's coexist, and then from time to time we'll have the occasional play where we highlight the other person's best quality, right? But on every minute or every second that LeBron and AD share the court, they are making each other better basketball players, which is pretty damn insane given how good they already are individually. And that was, to me, the big reminder And this is where I even say they exceeded expectations, because, you know, with players of that stature, of that caliber, stature especially, it can take time. You know, overpassing takes place, and you have, you know, rotations and just like general chemistry issues that can sometimes kind of show up in the wrong spots. But the way that those guys play off of each other and then just immediately resumed the way that they were playing earlier this year, like, that to me is the thing that I am absolutely most excited to watch, not just this year but moving forward, is how much better can they get? This is only in their first year playing together.
I think the fact that they picked up where they left off so seamlessly is really a credit to how well they fit together in the first place, right? There's something natural about the chemistry, which is really what chemistry is, right? There's, mm-hmm. it's, you can learn each other better and all that, but every guy has kind of a general nature to his game. Like, I know when LeBron comes off of a ball screen against a drop, he's not going to take that elbow pull up. That's just not the nature of his game, right? Mm-hmm. And each guy has that, kind of what they do naturally, and theirs just happens to fit really well together, not just amongst the stars, but the role players too. So the fact that we were able to, and I love that they did it against Orlando. I wish Isaac played. He's such a phenomenal young player. Yeah. And but Orlando's a team that gave us problems. Remember, they're long,
a lot of athleticism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. And like that, which is why I would have wished Isaac would have played, but glad to have him back. He was killing it in his first few minutes back from injury today. But so seeing them against that type of team, and then what's the other team that we saw him against? Was Dallas, right? Mm-hmm. Different type of team. You got this dominant pick and roll ball handler who's just a completely different type of player, and the system is different. Vucevic is, you know, kind of the center of Orlando's attack, no pun intended. And so seeing them really go on like dominant runs against like seventh, eighth seed type teams, although Dallas is certainly better than Orlando, and have those teams be very different stylistically, I think bodes well for like, yeah, we're already at that two tiers above those types of teams.
Yep, absolutely. Let's finish on this one. We've talked about how Waiters could potentially replace Rondo, how J.R. Smith and Waiters might, you know, make up for Rondo and Bradley's absence. But at the end of the day, the players who are going to be asked to do more with those guys out is going to be Alex Caruso and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And again, so the caveat on top of all the caveats of small sample size that we've been talking about here is that the Lakers played the Washington Muggles, and they were already a bad team, and then they were substantially worse. You know, they are substantially worse right now. So, you know, it actually serves as a really good confidence game, but not too much you can really learn from it. My question to you, Pete, is like, after seeing these three games, you know, how are you feeling about larger role Alex Caruso, or the different kind of basketball that the starting lineup plays with KCP in it than they do with Avery Bradley in it?
Yeah, I think with KCP, we've lost some physicality on defense at the guard spot that I think will be, you know, I think James Harden and like Harden and Westbrook's physicality specifically at the point of attack. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see how we would defend that, because they both have lots of shoulders and forearms and elbows and things like that. That I think missing Bradley will, I think that
and
will
also
hurt.
Reputation. And like he gets to like players like Bradley, players like Beverly, they get to be a little bit more physical.
Really good point.
Mm-hmm. Caruso doesn't get to be that physical. You know, he hasn't earned that yet.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I didn't mean it like, yeah, I didn't, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's a good point. So I have some concerns with the physicality of our perimeter defense. I also think the injection of Dion and JR make us a little worse on defense. I think the difference in which they make us better on offense is far exceeds what it would be on defense. But I do think that I have some concerns about our perimeter defense. I'm curious to see how that develops. As far as Alex, he was great as a playmaker in this game. He looked like a varsity guy, you know, like JV's got nine and you need one of the VAR guys to step in this game against Washington, which for, you know, but unlike the preseason, I remember he really struggled in the preseason.
Yeah.
He handled the on-ball responsibilities really well. He hit a couple of threes. He managed the game well, had, you know, I think 6 assists.
Got to the line.
Got to the line a lot, knew when to attack, had a nice like little finish that he's been working on. I've seen him practice with that like righty layup on the left side of the basket where you kind of duck your mm-hmm. right shoulder underneath, and just more on-ball guard skill type stuff. It's against the Wizards, who are really bad on defense. Yeah. So, you know, grain of salt and all that, but Caruso, I thought, looked excellent. We didn't see him enough due to foul trouble, and he just had one of those games in the last game when all the guys were playing. Caruso's value is ultimately alongside great players, mm-hmm. but I do think that I'm way less concerned about our playmaking than before and shot creation. And what I would say shot creation, and I want to explain what I mean by that, is like it's the ability to create an advantage either for yourself or for a teammate, mm-hmm. right? But in today's day and age, when there's so much switching, being able to create for yourself is essential, I mm-hmm. think, especially in playoff basketball, as part of that equation. And so I saw more of that from Caruso, even if it's just coming around simple ball screens. And like Kuzma can get his own, Dion can get his own, JR can get his own, Markieff can get his own. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like spread out enough to where rather than having a point guard or a primary ball handler who creates advantage on every play the way LeBron does, it's all these different guys that, you know, you work the ball around, create some advantage for them. They're going to be able to.
If the ball can find the bad matchup, mm-hmm. most of the guys who catch the ball there are going to be able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, there are a few places to hide a poor on-ball defender against this unit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's exciting, man. We're right there. We you know, most important than anything that we talked about here is that the Lakers got through this healthily. You know, they are as intact as they were as when they showed up to Orlando. You know, so that was always going to be the top priority. And from there, you kind of added, you know, you hope to answer a couple questions whenever possible and or maybe not answer them, but you know, do enough to be able to see how things might be able to play out. And I think that's where we find the Lakers right now. So we are going to end this one here. In tomorrow's show, we'll look around at, you know, some of the other teams maybe that we were able to check out over the course of all these scrimmages and really start to ramp up and prepare you guys for games that are starting here in the next few days. So they start to matter here and so will these podcasts. They will start to matter.
It's good to have it back, man.
Oh man. It was so exciting. Even today, it's funny when basketball came back, you're like, I'm never going to, I thought to myself, I'm never going to skip a game again. You know, it's just like, I just can't see myself ever like taking basketball for granted again. And then the Lakers were like, well, LeBron isn't playing, Anthony Davis isn't playing, Kyle Kuzma isn't playing. I was like, oh, you're testing me. All right.
Oh, man. I got keys to the in-game video footage, man. I'm never leaving again. It's going to take way longer for me to get bored.
Have you seen the sun since you got those keys?
Oh.
I'm ending it there. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.